Dasharanandana Vrajana Ranjana Janana Kiravana Sari Janana Kiravana Sari Paramahamsa Brahmatakasaya Stotara Sita Sri Shimani Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Kita Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Kita Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kita Vrayam Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vastri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kita Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gila Govardhan Kita Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Navadvip Dham ki jai, Shri Radhakund ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, and all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees, and all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Having come together, congregating tonight to celebrate and contemplate the wonderful appearance of Aristasura, in honor of whom we will be reading from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 36. Text 1. Shukadev Goswami said, "The demon Arista then came to the cowherd village. Raj. Appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump, he made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves." And the Vishnu Purana explains with some additional significant details that it was midway through the period of dusk when Krishna was becoming very eager for Rasa Lila, that this exciting and unexpected appearance of Aristasura heightened the ecstasy of the occasion. Aristasura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns. every now and then passing Stu and Jern. My dear king, clouds hovered about sharp-horned Aristasura's hump. He was like a Brahma bull with a big hump. And that hump was like a mountain with clouds hovering around. He was huge. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. He was a terrorist. Indeed, the strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they had miscarriages. The domestic animals fled the pasture in fear. O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda shelter, for shelter, crying, "Krishna, Krishna." When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, "Don't be afraid." Then he called out to the bull demon as follows. See, the Brijabasis by this time, because Arista was like, he was actually the last demon to attack Braj before Narada Muni went and informed Kamsa that, you know, the child you fear and his brother are both hiding in Braj, and then speeding up the different elements in Krishna's Leela to conclude his Vrindavan Leela and onto Mathura and Dwarka. So the Brijabasis, having experienced his attack of these demons so many times, were gaining faith in Gargamuni's words. And many times Nanda Maharaj reminded the cowherd men, and sometimes they reminded him of Gargamuni's words, that this child will protect you through many calamities. And Gargamuni inferred some divine empowerment from Lord Narayan. So they came to believe, and they had increasing faith by witnessing time after time after time how these demons would attack and Krishna would save them, that they began to have faith that Lord Narayan empowers this boy to kill these demons. So they were gaining faith that this boy was specifically empowered by Lord Narayan. So then Krishna, very nonchalantly and indignantly, addressed the demon, "You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you?" And then Krishna slapped his arms with his palms. That sound enraging Arista all the more. And then, first, you know, he made his, like, challenge, and then he just nonchalantly rested his arm on his friend. Okay, bring him on. And that sequence, the first challenging him and then just nonchalantly resting on his friend, so that just enraged Aristasura right to the max. Because Krishna wants to, you know, just bring out all the demoniac elements within us. So In addressing Arunartas, which is the microcosm of the macrocosm, if it's addressing these demons, he wants to heighten their envy right to the max and then just get it done and over with once and for all. So in this way, Krishna showed his contempt for the demon, which provoked Arista so terribly that he pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds now hovering around his upraised tail as he's in his assault mood, furiously charged Krishna. pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes. Arista rushed toward him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. And Krishna seized him by the horns and threw him back 18 steps. And then the demon got up, breathing hard and sweating all over, again charged Krishna in a mindless rage. And Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his lotus foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and then yanked out one of his horns and struck him with it until the demon lay prostrate on the ground. And then Parishtashura went to the abode of Yamaraj. And then Krishna, who is a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram. And then immediately thereafter, Narada went to Kamsa and told him that the child you fear is the one who's killing all your terrorists. He's in Braj with his brother Balaram. And then, in the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj quotes from the commentaries of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, having gleaned an insight into this Leela from the Puranas. So after killing Arishtashira, the young gopis said, "Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull." Even though Arista was a terrible demon, still he was a bull, a male cow, the emblem of religion, and the father figure who you have killed. And since you cow, now you have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritishra. But how can you possibly purify yourself without having to go to all the holy places of pilgrimage in the three worlds? And Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander all over the universe just to purify myself? I will bring all the countless places of pilgrimage right here and bathe in them. Just watch." And then Krishna struck the earth with his heel, making such a large impression in the earth. And then he said, he announced arrogantly to the gopis, "This is the water of Bhagavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here." And then, when all the holy places appeared before Krishna in their personified form, he said, "You see all the holy places standing before me?" And the gopi said, "No." Then the major holy places personified stood up, coming before Krishna and the gopis, and introducing themselves. "I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am Amaradirgika. I am the river Shona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamrapani. I am the holy place famous as Pushkar. I am the river Saraswati. And we are the Godavari, Jamuna, and Rava rivers, and the confluence of those rivers at Prayag to see our waters." And Krishna entered those holy waters, and after purifying himself, he became even more arrogant and said, "I have produced a pond containing all the holy places of the universe. whereas you gopis have never performed any religious duties on the earth for the pleasure of Brahma, then, in response to Krishna's increasing arrogance, the gopis replied, or rather, Srimati Radharani replied, "We will make an even more beautiful pond. Get to work." So then the gopis saw that Aristasura's hooves had created a shallow ditch just west of Krishna's pond, so the excavation had already been begun by Arista. So then the gopis began digging up clumps of mud with their hands, and in an hour's time, the whole kund was excavated. And then Krishna was astonished to see the pond. He said, "It's very nice, but it's dry. So you can fill your kund with the water from mine." To which she replied, "No, no, 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 no. That can never be. Because the waters of your kund are also contaminated by your extraordinary offense of killing a boy cow, a bull, the emblem of religion, and the father of all. So we'll fill our pond with the water from Manasi Ganga." So they formed a line. And with billions of water pots, vowed to fill the kund with the water, the holy waters from Manasa Ganga, and make it even more renowned in all the three worlds than Krishna's kund. Then Krishna, not wanting to see any perspiration on the face of his beloved, gestured to the leader of those holy places, a heavenly personality, the intimate associate, and the representative of all those holy places, who rose out of Krishna's pond and bowed down before the daughter of King Vrishabhanu. And with folded palms and tears pouring, this is a mistake, says tears pouring from his eyes, it's actually her eyes, female, goddess, grammatical error. She began praying to Srimati Radharani in devotion. Quote, "O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them, and thus he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued." And then after further glorification of Srimati Radharani, that goddess said, "We have come on his order to live in this most excellent pond which he created from the imprint of his soul, the soul of his foot, in the earth." And here's a very interesting point, the conclusion of the words of the goddess. "But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our heart's desire bear fruit." So this is the essence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in this one prayer. Radha Dasyam. As Srila Prabhupada said in his own simple way, don't try to see Krishna, but serve in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. This is his simple rendition of his Guru Maharaj's words. Don't try to enjoy Krishna. Don't let your devotion to Krishna be tinged with your own selfish feelings of enjoyment. But the highest devotion is das, das, anudas to the servants of Lord Gauranga. which has its counterpart in maidservant to the maidservant to the maidservant, unlimitedly removed from the intimate associates of Srimati Radharani, because she alone can serve Krishna with utmost selfless devotion. And because of that utter selflessness, she can most fully draw out the rasa which is innate within Krishna. He knows it, he feels it, but to draw it out and make it flow to its fullest, purest form requires his Ladini Shakti personified. Krishna's internal potency has three major categories: Sat, Chit, Ananda, or Sandini, existence, eternal existence, which manifests the paraphernalia of the spiritual world, and whose deity is Balaram. Samvit, cognizance, consciousness, the feelings, the emotions, the knowledge, the awareness, the consciousness of the spiritual world, whose presiding deity is Vasudeva. And Ladini Shakti, the ecstasy of the essence of that cognizance, love, whose deity is Srimati Radharani. So according to occasion, Yoga Maya emphasizes these different features of her threefold manifestation. Radhakund is non-different from Srimati Radharani, being the essence of the love, the melted hearts which flow between the lover and beloved. So hearing the prayers spoken by the representative goddess of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "Kindly tell me your desire." Then the goddess told her quite plainly, "Our lives would be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corners of her eyes, Srimati Radharani replied with a smile, "Please come." The gopis all applauded her decision and immersed in an ocean of happiness, beautifying all creatures, mobile and stationary, the dike between the full Shyamakund and the empty Radhakund burst, and those holy waters rushed in and filled the pond, which is the other divine appearance we are celebrating tonight, the appearance of Sri Radhakund. Then Krishna said, "May this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and enjoy pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are," he told Srimati Radharani. And then she replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may have killed thousands of aristas here." And then she gave a prediction, a prophecy. "In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is the spot where you chastise Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me." So, who resided at Radhakund? At Radhakund, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita was compiled by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's samadhi is there. Raghunath Das Goswami resided, the intimate associates of Srimati Radharani. And in Gaurlila, you know, when Lord Gauranga came to Braj and he was asking everywhere, where is Radhakund, where is Shyamakund, nobody could tell him. But seeing one like a puddle in the corner of a rice paddy and immersing himself in that water in great devotion, offering prayers to Radhakund, she was revealed again. And that Radhakund is also manifest in Navadvip Dham. That's where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, after his vow to chant a billion names, that means 192 names for 192 rounds for years and years, beginning at the Yogapita and then going to Brajapatna, the banks of Radhakund, where his samadhi, as well as that of his Guru Maharaj, Gaurakisharadas Babaji, with a little Govardhan hill of Govardhan Shilas. So you see, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati manifesting the Gaurlila aspect of the intimate devotion of the associates of Srimati Radharani for her, translating into an anguish for the plight of the earth due to the misrepresentation of Lord Gauranga's pure teachings by the Apasampradayas. And the burning desire, you know, in the month of Kartik we're offering these lamps, meaning we want our hearts to burn with a desire to please Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, which is our only approach to Radha and Krishna. So with that burning desire to fulfill the will of the previous acharyas, the will of Lord Gauranga, the Prativati Yachayati Nagaradi Gram, Sarapapachara Habivananam, let this mercy be manifest and spread and flow everywhere. Radhakund is the embodiment of the flow of the love. Krishna and his beloveds. So then, Krishna had Rasalila, which was his original intention before this whole interruption caused by Ristasura, which so much highlighted and enhanced the whole Rasalila. So, when Krishna wants to reveal something really important, he highlights it with the dark backdrop of ordeal or crisis. And oftentimes the demons serve this function. We have much to learn from every aspect of Krishna's Leela. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained these demons in terms of the bestial qualities within us, the anarthas, which give rise to aparad. Aparad means antagonistic to Radha, the personification of love and devotion in worship to Krishna. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that if your chanting is becoming dry, or if you go before the deities day after day, year after year, decade after decade, and you know when you hear Govinda Madhipurusham, you're supposed to bow down, and then you mechanically go up and go and bow down, and it becomes mechanical and ritualistic, as does your chanting, and your consciousness becomes stagnant. There are certain ways to bring Krishna Lila alive in your consciousness today by thinking how Krishna purifies these demons. We can see how Krishna's, we can actually increase and enhance our awareness of how Krishna is chastising the bestial qualities within us. And those demons within us, they want to be liberated, as Aristasura, their forefathers, were. but it's only possible with the help of Krishna. The demons who are killed by Balaram represent there's more emphasis on your own initiative. And the extent of your own initiative being developing a sense of humility so attractive that Balaram appears within your hearts and kills those demons. Other demons are so obvious. I mean, they're all beyond our own ability to address or overcome. But on some that are obviously further beyond our ability necessitates Krishna, who comes to please Balaram in killing the rest of the demons within our hearts. So these demons represent different aspects of the false ego. And it's very interesting that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained what each demon represents, except Arista. I've never seen that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or I can't remember that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ever actually addressed Arista Shura as what he represents. But following in the mood of our acharyas, we can infer certain attributes within us, such as male ego, that domineering, conquering, aggressive, enjoying spirit, which has to be killed before pure love can fully manifest within our hearts. And Radha Kund is that place where even where there's only one male, the spiritual world is a place where there's only one male, meaning one enjoyer who attracts. Everyone else has the mood to be enjoyed by him. But Radha Kund is that place where even Krishna's own intimate cowherd boyfriends like Madhu Mangal, Sridham, Sudham, and Arjun, who assist him in his meetings with Srimati Radharani, cannot go. They have to stay off on the Shyamakund side. And in relation to the month of Kartik, in which devotees are seeking the blessings of Srimati Radharani, especially, which should be manifest in the humility in our own hearts, which is only possible by the dust of her feet, which is carried in the waters of the Charanamrita of Radha Kund. When Krishna, or as, actually, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was at Radha Kund, and the Sahajas, Samarchmana, they hear intimate romantic pastimes of Krishna, and he lectured continuously on Upadeshamrita, which, you know, goes from, you know, controlling the tongue and the other senses in his progression towards residence at Radha Kund. The holiest place, an equally elevated and exalted holy place, does not exist anywhere in the material or spiritual creation. Rupa Goswami explains that in all the universe, and of course the acharyas use the universe as a reflection of Rasa Lila, with the suns rotating the pole star and each of them with their moons and planets, moons and satellites and stars. In all the universe, the earth is the most sacred planet, because on the earth is the land of Bharatvarsha, on whom the crown is the district of Mathura, upon whom the crest jewel is Vrindavan, because that's where Krishna performed his Rasa Lila. But that Rasa Lila incorporated all the gopis, the Priyanam, Sakis, and the all the varieties of the gopis, right down to the sadhana siddhas, like the Rishichari gopis and the Shrutichari gopis, the sages from Dandarkarani, everybody was there. The Nitya Leela associates, with the Sadhana Siddha associates, and they were all together, but that did not allow such a pure exchange of love as would warrant Krishna's fullest satisfaction, so Srimati Radhani left. And Krishna pursued her, and the Rasa Leela that followed that incident took place at Govardhan, which is so sacred, being none different from Krishna himself, upon which the highest, most exalted place is Radhakund. So, Aristasura is like male ego, the conquering, controlling, aggressive, enjoying spirit in the hearts of males and females alike, to the extent that they are averse to the humble service to the servants of Krishna. But even these demons have so much to teach us. And by understanding their nature and the elements within us that come from them, that correlate with them, we can appreciate more how Krishna, in the form of his holy name, is purifying us of these elements within us. And the demons themselves are very interesting personalities to contemplate. Sanatana Goswami, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, makes a statement which appears contradictory to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. He said, everything, all the features in the Prakat Leela are also there in the Aprakat Leela, including the killing of the demons up to Kamsa. Whereas Srila Prabhupada said, when Krishna wants to fight, he has to come to the material world because there's no demons with whom he can fight in the spiritual world. The Prabhupada made another statement qualifying the previous. There is no facility for demons in the spiritual world. So this is the key to reconciling the apparent difference between the words of Sanatana Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. Sanatana Goswami says, there are demons in the spiritual world. Prabhupada said, there's no facility. There are different kinds of demons. In the material world, we have demons who just make life miserable for others, their whole life, until either Krishna or Krishna in his future time just kills them, and then everybody feels relieved. The demons in the spirit, in the Aprakat Leela, they have the same appearance as the demons in the Prakat Leela, but they don't have any history. It's not like they had a lifetime of inflicting misery upon others until finally Krishna comes or time kills them and everybody's relieved. They just magically appear as creations of Yoga Maya. You know, nobody had any idea that such things existed. They're just going off to dance in the forest and suddenly Aristasura appears on the scene. But Krishna has dealt with Aristasura unlimited times. It's continually reenacting in the spiritual world. But Yoga Maya is so wonderful. She makes Krishna forget that he already killed Aristasura. And he makes Krishna forget what's going to happen next. Devotees are sometimes subjected to this. They forget what they've done. They forget what they're doing. This comes from Krishna. And then when the demon appears, it's such a surprise. Like, you know, even in the material world, if you know, I've never gone to movies, but I hear that people say, well, I saw that one, I don't want to see it. Or maybe it's a really good movie, I saw it twice, but I don't want to see it a three. Because you know what's going to happen. It becomes completely boring once you've seen how the suspense develops and it's just an illusion and it's useless. But Yogamaya's drama is so intense that all anyone can do is call out, Krishna, Krishna. mean, everybody's having miscarriages, and this demon's got his hump in the clouds. Got his head in the clouds, too. And everybody's having, and then Krishna kills him. And then it just enhances, especially by the creation of Radha Kund. So much enhances his Leela. And this enhancing process is going on unlimitedly forever. So these like mystical, magical creations that just come out of the atmosphere created by Yogamaya. They come out of nowhere. They come out of Yogamaya. Out of the ether. And then it just like enlivens and activates everything to such an extent to heighten the bhava and the Leela, and then disappear. And Krishna forgot all about it. He forgot that he's done this unlimited times before. He'll do it unlimited times again. But it's a complete surprise and an adventure. And what is the effect on what Aristashira represents as far as male ego? You know, so you see, you know, men like to fight. And you know, it's that conquest spirit. And you know, sometimes you'll see like amazing things, like guys are watching a football game on TV. I can't imagine what excitement or adventure or edification, but they're just like completely absorbed. And a woman walks by, what is going on? These guys are so enraptured with these guys with helmets just bumping into each other and bouncing off it, falling on it. What is it? And then all you got to say to Amatati is, see that guy with number 13? He's getting divorced. And they, because, you know, when it comes in the realm of romance and relationships, Amatati is, and the guy is, who cares about his divorce? But it's just all Maya. It's just different aspects, the male and the female aspects of Maya. So male ego just doesn't mean something that only men have. You know, some women have it even worse. It's got little or nothing to do with the physical form. It's that aggressive conquest. So Aristashira had it to the max. And he's like the archetype of male ego. He's trying to become the male, the only male, the second male, or maybe the only male if he can kill Krishna, to enjoy in the realm of Radha Kund where everyone else is female. But he did not realize that all his mystic potency with such an inconceivable ability of conquest met a superior power in this form of Gopal. The superior power being the embodiment of beauty, sweetness, and charm, which brought that archetype of male ego to his knees in submission. Not ecstatic loving submission in the case of the Prakat Lila. In the case of the Aprakat Lila, these demons, Srila Prabhupada says, there is no facility for demons in the spiritual world. It means there's no envy. They're fueled by envy in the material world. There's no facility. There's no envy. There's no enmity. It's just all play. It's all lila. But there's an intimate relationship between Upper Golok and Gokul. One being a reflection of the other, and the material world being a reflection of that. So, and the spiritual world, as Brahma Samhita says, is protected by those 10 tridents so that anyone bereft of the grace of Krishna cannot enter. So there's different kinds of demons. And sometimes, when Krishna wants to go on a joyride, he'll summon Kaliya or Keshi and jump on his back and all the cowherd, because, you know, Kaliya is such a long... Then all the cowherd boys can jump on his back and they go riding off their adventures and Braj. And then when they're done, Kaliya just disappears. So he doesn't like bother anybody or intimidate anybody. He's always having miscarriages because he's just gone. And they forgot that he ever existed until they want him again. And he just comes out of nowhere. And the gopis When Krishna left the gopis to utilize that separation to bring their loving anticipation to the highest crescendo of kirtan, what were the gopis doing? They were enacting Krishna's pastimes. One gopi became a whirlwind, carrying Krishna into the sky, and then Krishna killed the whirlwind. One gopi became Putana, the other came to suck her breast and was killed. She was, and then there was Dhanakasura. What was Lord Nityananda doing as a child? Every day in Ekachakra, he had his boys assembled to make these demons out of reeds. And then they would smash the demon, and all the parents from the boys far away would hear, "Jaini Dai! The demon is dead." So, what is the inspiration in these gopi demons? It's the arrangement of Yoga Maya to further enhance the ecstasy of loving reunion. And then, when Yoga Maya has utilized, the gopi demons disappear and the gopis just become immersed in romantic dealings with Krishna again. It was the Yoga Maya who imbued them with the mood of demons to play a role to highlight Krishna's Leela. And when the Leela was fulfilled by the gopi demons, Yoga Maya creations disappeared. Until Krishna desires to fight, or the devotees want to see a good show again, and then they come, fulfill their purpose, and then they're gone. So, did Bush become president again? You know, Tapo, no. He did. Did you vote for him? Did you really vote for him?
No.
Oh, you were just teasing us. Okay. So President Bush has so much to learn from Krishna Leela. Because he thinks he can have a war on terror. But if you declare a war on terror, it doesn't just submit. It is inflamed. And you can kill whoever he wants to kill. They'll just multiply and grow back out of the sand. And it's just like exasperating the situation. It is not by war that hatred is killed, but by Krishna only. Krishna Leela alone can envy be stilled. So you should preach to her. Because he says, they're the axis of evil, and they're saying, he's the axis of evil. Well, they're all the axis of evil. So they should read Srimad Bhagavatam and see how Krishna deals with terrorists. Oh, and Krishna leaves Vrindavan? That is a very inconceivable phenomenon. So if here, in his Prakat Leela, he's leaving Vrindavan, does that mean he's leaving Vrindavan in Golok also? Yes and no. And in Golok, he also leaves Vrindavan, in a sense. He steps out of the Leela, and then quickly... But really, in this Prakat Leela, just after this pastime, when Narada Muni tells Kamsa and then escalates everything until Krishna has to go to Mathura for the wrestling match. Another thing male ego likes to see in wrestling matches. Can't imagine what kind of taste somebody can derive from. But that's what Kamsa arranged for Krishna. And Krishna went. But when Krishna leaves Vrindavan in his Prakat Leela, he renounces his Brijabasi mood. In that sense, he really does leave Vrindavan. He stays there in his bhava form in the hearts of his devotees more intimately than before. But in Prakat Leela, Krishna actually leaves his Brijabasi mood to become a Mathuravasi and Dwarkavasi. In Golok, he never gives up his Brijabasi mood. So even though he may step out of the scene as if going to Mathura, he runs back because he can't give up his Brijabasi mood. And he hurries back. So, after the appearance of Radhakund, Krishna's Rasa Leela was heightened to the purest expression when only Srimati Radharani's own intimate associates were allowed to participate. Only her chosen, most intimate associates were allowed to participate in that Rasa Lila. So the whole bhava was so heightened by the appearance of Arista. And then Rasa Lila resumed with more heightened bhava than ever before. So in every religion, they understand that dance is a form of communion, expressing a communion, which is not limited to any physical kind of dance, because even in an infirm condition, we always have the option to dance in spirit. Dance is an expression of moving gracefully, full of grace, through all the challenges and lessons and transformation in life. You can see what healing ensues when our eyes and lips dance in expression of friendship and gratitude towards a friend. Our heart and mind can dance, beholding the freshness and the ever-new charm of Sri Sri Radha Vidhamachandra. The soul naturally wants to dance, seeing expressions of healing and grace and compassion and love. It's a possibility in relationships which are founded in grace and charm. And everyone dreads the leap of faith as if it's jumping off into the irrational unknown. But that's not what it means. In truth, it means a celebration of a joy and hope with a potency beyond your own ability and necessitating and conveying empowerment when we humble ourselves. Dance expresses the human longing to come closer in a relationship to God. And it brings the impossible within the realm of tangible creative experience. Dance is sacred as a gesture of letting go of the sin and bondage that hold us down and makes our life stagnant and ritualistic. It's an expressing of an inner life which needs to be shared if we want to really build a community of faith. And dance is an expression which sparks faith and commitment in pursuance of a reality beyond what our empiric senses can apprehend. It expresses a movement toward a world where mystical sweetness, beauty, and charm conquers over all the bestial elements within our hearts and within the world. And it breaks the bonds of death and prepares us for a world described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he saw the tigers and the deer dancing together in the Jayakanda forest. Blessed is Vrindavan, the transcendental abode of Krishna. There's no hunger, anger, or thirst there, the facility for the demons. That is the world where even ferocious animals live with gentle creatures, in harmony with man, in transcendental friendship and communion. And that is the world where all motion is like dance, all talk is like song, and it is all activated by the song of Krishna's flute, carried on the breeze through the barriers of time and space. And that kind of motion, that kind of harmony, graceful motion called dance, expresses a rhythm and harmony with the creative power of the divine, which is Yogamaya, who arranges the communion between the individual soul and the super soul. So that Yogamaya arranges for such demons to appear in Goloka, and this is a response. This is Krishna's fulfilling the desires of the gopis previously, when the sky became surcharged with those love-laden clouds announcing the advent of the rainy season. And those milkmaids of Braja, who were so dearly loved by Krishna because they so dearly loved Krishna, and feeling intoxicated by singing the praises of Krishna in their kirtan as they went, as they agreed the night before, to Jamuna early in the morning when it's so cold, to take their sacred bath and then worship Katyayani. And as they were making the deity out of sand, that deity appeared before them and encouraged them that she had self-manifest to accept their prayers. In worship, they worshipped her with a desire that that Yogamaya, who affects the union of the individual soul with Krishna, would make arrangements for them to meet with Krishna and express all their love and devotion to him and please him in the most intimate way, in the most complete sacrifice. And that same opportunity, that same achievement, has become available to all by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, conveying Lord Gauranga's teachings in the West, fulfilling that burning desire of his Guru Maharaj, that this pure message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not be misrepresented and misconstrued by the Apasampradayas, depriving the world of the precious, sacred fulfillment of life. Krishna Lila is very exclusive. When Krishna appeared in this world, very few conditioned souls were so qualified as to enlist in his holy entourage. The sages of Dandakaranya and the Shrutis, who became attracted to Lord Ram and wanted intimate association with him, were granted the blessing to take birth as Brijavasis. But by and large, the rest of the world was excluded from entering into Krishna's Lila. And, as we discussed before, how the 11th canto reveals Krishna's afterthoughts, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami further clarifies Krishna's thoughts, compassionate feelings towards us. Krishna was thinking, after concluding his Braj Leela, he was still feeling dissatisfied. That I wanted to spread divine love within the world by revealing to the eyes of this world the most pure expressions of love between the Brijabasis and Krishna. But very few were actually attracted. Many demons came and were liberated in the hands of Krishna. But not many conditioned souls actually entered into that leela, because it is so exalted and so pure and so holy that it lies far beyond the grasp of conditioned souls. So Krishna was thinking it wasn't successful. The living entities are my children. I'm their father. They're dependent on me. They need my help. But it didn't work. So then he was thinking, only if I come as a devotee, because you can't really preach devotional service without practicing it yourself. So Krishna was thinking, I will practice it. And he was also thinking of the questions the gopis were asking him after he disappeared before the Rasa Leela. Because their questions was an attempt to resolve doubts in their own hearts, that after they had sacrificed everything for Krishna and he just left them, was he ungrateful? And Krishna, in so many ways, showed that he was feeling the pain within them more than they were. But he could not respond at that time because he had to bring that separation to such a pitch that they would embrace him within. And the whole external world would just fade into oblivion in response. And then he told the gopis that for your super excellent deeds and your unprecedented sacrifice, I am unable to pay you. Generally, I reciprocate with my devotees according to their sacrifice and worship, but in your case, I am unable to. Within the lifetime of Brahma, I cannot reciprocate your love. Krishna confessed that he was a debtor to their love and sacrifice. But he did not remain a debtor. He came back to pay that debt. And in that way, the Rasa Leela, which is such an exclusive affair, such an intimate pastime, in which the world cannot even appreciate without the teachings and process given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what to speak of enter. So Krishna reciprocated with the gopis by walking the same path of sacrifice and ordeal that they did, making Krishna his sole object of sacrifice and pursuit and endeavor. And more than reciprocating, because that love, that most pure, intimate, holy love of the gopis for Krishna has, as a counterpart, a natural compassion for all other living entities, especially those who are suffering because of forgetfulness of Krishna. So when Krishna came back in his golden form, disguising himself with a golden luster, which is the outward aura of the internal bhava of Srimati Radharani, that pure, golden-loving ecstasy, he gave a process by which anyone and everyone, simply by humbling themselves sufficiently to sacrifice all these bestial, demon-like anarthas which give rise to aparad, sacrificing them, placing them on the altar of the holy name to be burned in the fire of devotion, opening the portals
to Braj Lila, to anyone and everyone who simply takes to this process. But any precious offering is not without its challenges and its terrors, because lurking in the midnight darkest hours of this Kali Yuga, between the time when Lord Garanga came and that dawning when the seeds of love he planted in this earth really blossom into a golden era, Kali, the personification of darkness and sin, whose symptoms are quarrel and hypocrisy, and thrives in the age of machinery, for which it is named the Iron Age, is trying to delude all expected pilgrims from the path back home. And he himself is not so much to be feared, because hypocrisy is easy to identify in its most blatant form. But it is his undercover agents who approach as his friends, but offer a deluding intoxicant, meaning some semblance to the gift of Lord Garanga with some deviation, some misrepresentation, which poisons the consciousness. And like a wolf going after a flock of sheep when the lion is away, but not daring to come near when the lion returns, trying to steal away their portion before that golden age really dispels all the darkness and torpor and gloom. So, Srila Prabhupada emphasized that this movement cannot be destroyed from without, because the empowerment is within. It can only be destroyed from within. As when Krishna wanted to remove the Jada dynasty from the surface of the earth, he incited that quarrel from within, which made them so vulnerable that they fell prey to each other's hands. So the way to remain strong internally is by japa. Japa is going internal with a holy name to illumine the darkness within and destroy all the hiding places for the demons in the heart. The facility they need is darkness to lurk and grow and breed and thrive. When that all those dark places are illumined by the rising sun of the holy name, there's no facility within our hearts, and the demons have to leave. But you can only go internal so far before you need to go into relationship. Japa is that internal meditation on the holy name to purify the heart. And when the heart is purified, it is for the sake of relationships. And relationships are purified by Sankirtan, coming together and congregationally offering all those demons, impediments, obstacles on the altar of the holy name to be redeemed by the holy name of Krishna, non-different from Krishna himself. Just as Aristashura was redeemed because despite all his hideous, malicious, male egotistic incentives, because he approached Krishna, he was delivered. So, on this holy eve of the appearance of Aristashura and Radhakund, we should contemplate how all the demons within and without can be dispelled and delivered by the holy name of Krishna. And that holy name of Krishna, none different from the Lord himself, is bringing out the demons within us so that our hearts can be made an adequately pure residence for him to make his holy Dham within us. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah.
Shri Shri Radha Govinda.
He had Rasalila every night. Oh. Anything else? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.